Hi, everybody. This is Alana S. for the Anonymous Us podcast. The first story that I'll be reading for you is called The Cup. It's actually a poem, and we really haven't had any poems, so I'm really excited. In fact, we had two poems this month. And I think it's really beautiful. It's from a donor-conceived person. It goes, a dialogue between a sperm donor and his child who don't know who each other is. I saw her pain on the paper and TV screen, anguished tears, a failed familial construction, a child lost in the depths of mind's conception. She felt a need, the need to hold me in her arms. She felt the yearning of every woman, so it seems, who wants to be maternally in their dreams. Here's my cup. See, it is half full. I gave you away. Deception will rule. Here's my cup. See, it is half empty. You sold me away, completely abandoned me. Here's the cup. We swim in the sea of men and boys. No roots for the tree. Screwed on the lid of the lives I'll never know, golden handshake of the human industry. How was I to know of the pain you won't be free? Now I'm alive, required, grateful for existence, wanted so deeply, eternally burdened and indebted, identity crushed, how it must be is how they said it. Here's my cup. Now it is half empty. I threw you away. Will you forgive me? Here's my cup. It is still half empty. Of kinship lost. Could you not see? Here's the cup. We swim in the sea. Of men and boys. Traumatized will be. My child, once lost, will never be regained. Our blood, once severed, created scars too deep. For this, I am sorry. Your forgiveness you can keep. Dehumanized I am, a commodity of modern marvel, an object of desire for adult, tear-jerked masses. They took you away. My father in the street passes. The next story I'm going to read is, it's titled, I've Never Met My Donor Father, and I Have No Desire to Do So. I was trying to think of an analogy recently to illustrate how some kids turn out really fine and happy with their donor conception story and history, and how others of us are just so much more tormented by it, or end up with behavioral problems and everything. And my analogy was, you know, using third-party reproduction and separating kids from their genetic parents and everything is kind of like drunk driving, in that, you know, most of the people who drive drunk will get home safely and have a great night out and have a lot of fun, probably. But the risks and chances and facts of the matter is, when you drive drunk, things are much more likely to go very wrong, and people's lives can be endangered from it. Parenting, just like in driving, you know, even biological parents can mess up, just like even people who are not driving drunk can mess up and get in a car accident. But your chances of messing up just increase so much more. Anyways, this story is called, I've Never Met My Donor Father, and I Have No Desire to Do So. I was conceived through sperm donation and my mother was adopted. So the nature and meaning of genetic relationships is something that has long been thought about and felt deeply in my family. I've never met my donor father, quote-unquote, and I have no desire to do so. I do not see this lack of contact with my biological father as something missing in my life, and I have no hurt at the fact of my creation. What does cause me hurt, however, is the idea constantly repeated by small numbers of donor-conceived children and in popular media representations of the issue that there must be something wrong with your life if you do not know your biological father. Over and over again, we hear the phrase that there's something missing in the lives of donor-conceived children, some meaning in their life that has been taken from them. But we all know what it is to question our place in the world. Most people eventually develop a sense of place and personhood, or at least learn to live with feelings of uncertainty. Yet for people who are adopted or born through donor egg or sperm, society continually reinforces that feeling. We are told repeatedly that, yes, there is something missing. This is a pervasive and cruel cultural myth, this idea that you cannot know who you are unless you know your biological parent. My whole life, I have been subjected to the shocked responses of people who, on learning that I don't know my donor father, could not understand how I could be comfortable with this and believed I must be harboring hurt about it. They found it difficult to imagine life without their own father, and they did not differentiate between their biological connection and their emotional familial connection born of shared experiences and values. But if I ever meet my biological father, I will not find a quote-unquote father in him. He had no input into the adult I am today besides his kind gift of the genetic building blocks I needed for my life to begin. The reality is you, the things that make you really you, are not your genes. There is no gene for your love of camping or the comfort you get from the smell of your mother's perfume. Knowing your biological parent will never explain why you love the one you do, why you hate early mornings or feel uplifted by classical music. Genes interact with your environment to create you, but they do not give meaning to your life. Even people who have a similar genetic makeup can be very different, and science is still far from tracing genetic roots for most illnesses, including those more linked to our personalities, such as some mental illnesses. Open the door, I'll edit it. And the circumstances of our upbringing further pollute our genetic stories. Which genes are expressed in us turns out to be a complex, messy mix of environment, culture, and perhaps even chance. The idea that on learning about a donor you would somehow be given some important insight into yourself is frankly ridiculous to me. Of course, this is a trick we play on ourselves every day when we lightheartedly explain our personality traits or those of our siblings as being inherited from others in our family. Normally, it is completely harmless, but in the case of donor-conceived people and adoptees, it creates a completely unnecessary and often damaging idea about what being donor-conceived means for their life. When my mother first met some members of her biological family who lived in the country, she came home and said to me, "Now I know why I love the bush." Her strong belief in biology meant she couldn't help overlooking both her history with her adopted family that could have led her to love the bush and differences with her biological family, which did not fit this narrative. Such as that she could never bear to kill an animal or really do anything other than coddle it, but her biological relatives, who were farmers, by nature of their jobs, had a different attitude. I note with sadness a submission received by your committee from a young woman who had grown up in a Maltese family, but it was not until she discovered her donor was Maltese that she allowed herself to feel a connection to that country. What a tragic and fruitless search is being pushed onto donor-conceived children by the idea that the only place they can find such personal and cultural meaning is through a biological connection, rather than cultural and personal connections. As a society, I believe we should be working towards developing a more mature and meaningful debate about what role biology plays in who we are. Rather than pandering to quasi-religious, biologically determinist beliefs, we should be actively challenging such ideas. As the biologist Stephen Jay Gould said, each individual has the potential to be and act in many different ways. We have, quote, a brain capable of the full range of human behaviors and predisposed towards none. This conception of humanity is clearly more nuanced and realistic than a simplistic biologically determinist model where we all have specific genes for our specific behavioral traits. The idea of genetic determinism traces back to thinkers of the 19th and early 20th century and has long been replaced with far more nuanced ideas in the scientific and philosophical literature. It's high time the rest of us catch up. Arguing that not allowing donor-conceived children access to their donor violates the United Nations Conventions on the Right of the Child is based on faulty assumptions about the role of these biological fathers in their lives. Three of the articles of the convention mentioned in the draft report are Article 3, the best interests of the child, children must be the primary concern in making decisions that may affect them. Article 7, all children have the right to a legally registered name, officially recognized by the government. Children have the right to a nationality. Children also have the right to know and, as far as possible, be cared for by their parents. Article 8, the preservation of identity. Children have the right to an identity, an official record of who they are. Governments should respect children's right to a name, a nationality, and family ties. These articles should not be used to justify such a change. Propagating these cultural myths is not in the best interest of the affected children. These children all have existing rights to names, nationalities, parents, histories, and identities. They have families who loved them, raised them, and in doing so shaped who they are today. To think that the very real rights of men who donated anonymously and do not want to be contacted by children could be violated on the basis of cultural mythology that I believe we should be fighting rather than endorsing saddens me greatly. However, I should note that not all donor-conceived children feel the same way I do, and I do not intend to undermine the absolutely real and very strong emotions they feel about not knowing their donor fathers. We as a society have created this mess, and we should fix it up. I would support an option of paying for genetic counseling for such children, as well as a mechanism for them to make contact with anonymous donors if the donors also wanted that contact, as this does not place the desires of one of the two people above the other. In conclusion, I do believe that many donor-conceived people suffer a real and tragic hurt from the knowledge that they do not know their biological father. I think the government should undertake to attempt to contact donors if approached by donor-conceived people, as it will likely cause little individual harm if both donor and child want to meet. But the hurt felt by donor-conceived children is largely based on misinformation and misunderstanding, and to further compound it by changing the laws and allowing men who identified anonymously to have their identities revealed is the wrong approach. Not least because if those men have already stated that they do not want to meet, revealing their identities will likely not provide the children the connection they desperately want. These children should be supported with counseling services. I also hope in writing its final report, the committee will acknowledge that the genetically determinist ideas about sperm donation are harmful in and of themselves, and will challenge these ideas rather than accepting them. This was submitted to the Law Reform Committee in 2011 in Australia. I hope you guys have a wonderful evening, and stay tuned for the next episode of the Anonymous Us podcast.